And welcome to That Horror Cast. I'm Mallory Smart.
And I'm Dmitry Samarov.
On today's podcast, we discuss the 1997 horror film, The Relic. The Relic is a story about a homicide detective and an anthropologist trying to destroy a South American lizard-like god who's on a people-eating rampage in a Chicago museum. Now, before diving in, I have to say this is one of our weirder episodes. We somehow discuss manifestos, Alexa low-key controlling my life, have a weird segue about a funeral I recently attended, talk about Scout Tafoya's taste in horror movies, and for some reason keep a segment of Dimitri's voice glitching because it was just really funny. Side note, the person who helped Hitler write Mein Kampf was Rudolf Hess. You're just going to have to listen to the whole episode to get this weird fact. That all being said, I hope you enjoy the show. Hello?
Yep, I'm here.
Yeah, I decided to turn the light on and close my blinds because it's that weird, like, it's going to get randomly dark moment.
Yeah.
And, like, the I can't rely on just, like, the outside light now.
Yep. So the day turns to night. Although it's been kind of dark all day. It's been dark all day with all this rain.
It's been very good coffee weather.
Yeah.
That's what I call it. Yes.
Coffee weather. Okay. Yeah. You feel like you're in Portland or something?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Come on, there's nothing better than like having a good cup of coffee and watching it rain.
I don't know that I've ever watched it rain.
I like watching rain. But then again, I'm a weird water person. I don't know if I even, like, told you, but I need to hear rain sounds to fall asleep. I actually do that.
Oh, you have, like, an app or a thing that makes the sound machine thing?
I would say sleeping. Its name, but if I say it, it responds to me, so.
Oh.
Yeah. So one of those fun devices.
So it's like it's an Alexa, isn't it? Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever, one of those AI demon home security things.
What's so funny about it, though, is we have two, one in the bedroom and one in the kitchen.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know we hooked up the kitchen one. So now when I say something loudly, I get two voices coming at me. It's really
Are they telling you different things?
It's like a bit of a delay, really. So, like, you catch it, then it's like an echo.
Are either of them telling you to kill or anything? Or
not yet.
Is it like, you know, son of Sam or anything like that?
It is going on while I'm sleeping, so who knows?
I'm sorry. I mean, I'll sound like a fucking old fuddy-duddy or Ted Kaczynski, but I do not understand how... why anybody would do that. To have let the tech voices run your house, I know.
See, it doesn't even need to be one of those devices. Like, if they still had just, like, regular, like, sound machines, if they weren't so, like, annoying or whatever. But, like, yeah, I just need sound to fall asleep to.
What's annoying about it? I'm sure there's, like, a million different ones you could get. Clunky?
Yeah. Whereas my device is just plugged into my outlet and I barely have to see it.
Yeah, and you don't know what else it's fucking subliminally sticking in your head. Like what things it's telling you to buy the next day or whatever at best.
Yeah, I mean, come on. That's happening with everything in my household, so.
Yeah, but but why? Why would you do that? I don't understand.
It's kind of like an indifference I have at this point.
That makes me sad.
Yeah. It's one of those, you know, maybe science is going to, like, fuck with my head. Maybe it already has fucked with my head. Maybe I don't care if it does.
You've given up. You're submitting.
I am submitting.
Alexa
won. I would be terrible
won.
In the Terminator. I would so suck. Like, I told her, it'd be like, let Skynet go on the rise. All right.
Yeah.
Like, what are we going to do?
You'd order yourself a Skynet sweatshirt or something, or a bumper
cool
sticker
enough.
For your car, for the car that your car is still in the shop. I heard your other podcast over the weekend. So,
do you know how depressing that is?
Why? What the fuck is wrong? It's been there for like months.
It's one of those things where
what
like,
is going on?
There is like a silver lining to this, but
you can't crash it. You can't ruin something new on it. Is that the silver lining?
We were paying for storage for it because like we don't have an extra parking space right now.
Oh.
And we decided we're just going to take it out of it and shut down that storage. And we're immediately going to try and find a place to park it around here once it's fixed. I haven't had to do that now.
Oh, because it's just sitting unfixed in the garage?
What's wild is that like it's literally like down the block from me. So anytime I go outside on a walk, I'll like look and be like, nope, haven't touched my car yet.
You can see it out there?
Yeah.
It's just sitting?
I was worried that maybe they didn't have my number. Like, maybe I gave it to them wrong. Yeah. But we had to change the oil on the other car, and we went to the same place. And they do have my number. They just said, oh, we haven't had a chance to look at it yet. And I'm like, no rush, because, you know, save money, because I know it's going to be a fix, you know?
Maybe you could have Alexa keep it on top of that so you don't have to. You can have Alexa drive it, too.
One day that is actually going to be a very real thing.
Oh, I'll be long dead by then.
I don't think so, unless you're going to do the Ted Kaczynski thing, because I think he killed himself based on AI, but whatever.
You think so?
Well, I do remember reading it was suicide, and I feel like if anything was going to put him over the edge, it would have been that.
Maybe it's just wore out. I mean,
that's my point. Fighting the machine, and then the machine got like way bigger suddenly.
I think he had bigger problems than the machine. He had Ted Kaczynski to contend with, even worse than Alexa.
Yeah, saying that you think the Unabomber dude is all right isn't exactly a very cool thing to say, but. Other than him bombing and maiming people, he has some interesting ideas. I think we've said this before.
Yeah. Just like so many in this country feel like about Hitler these days, you know? He had some really good ideas.
Okay.
You know, he was misunderstood.
Yeah. You know, at least Ted Kaczynski wrote his own manifesto. That's all I'm saying.
Did Hitler outsource the writing? Oh, he did. He had writers for My Struggle and stuff. Or,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had other his inmates in the jail like who had
it was
free
like
time.
His exact cellmate. I forget the name.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but no, it's kind of known. This is a great way to start off the podcast about the relic.
No, we'll tie it in.
I mean, I feel like we were almost there when we were talking about like digital.
We're talking about
then I was going to slowly get into like, oh, I got it at analog. And I'm forgetting right now how to spell conf. Oh my God. Google save.
KAMPF.
All right. Who
helped? Mein Kampf. Yeah.
Gotcha.
M-E-I-N and then K-A-M-P-F.
Yeah, all right. I like how everything is just being like, also known as My Struggle. Like, yes, we know that.
Yeah. Okay. Is it just taking you straight to Knausgaard now? Because the new Hitler.
Okay, who helped write this motherfucker?
Our new handsome Hitler with the flowing hair.
Oh, God. Yeah, this is too much for me to go into. But, yeah, there's so many. You look at Mein Kampf, and it's just way too much. Too much goes on the Google feed.
I mean, you don't even have to be Hitler to have a ghostwriter. I mean, most of the all these memoirs and autobiographies, the vast majority of them are ghostwritten, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the famous people, the people, the movers and shakers and the shapers of history don't have time to sit around and type shit into a fucking typewriter or a computer. They have their human Alexa to do all the grunt work for them.
Basically. Hey, and then, you know, just sort of tied it in, didn't you?
Did I?
Yeah.
How did I do it?
You're talking about Alexa and everything being streamlined and everything. And the reason why I picked this movie was because I was at Analog and I got this VHS for free.
Oh, and the big burning question is, did you get it to work?
The VHS? I did. Yeah, yep. I finally got the right adapter, and that was very interesting. It does not look good on a TV.
Oh, it's clunky, kind of like the random sleep sounds machine that you refuse to get instead of getting spied on 24/7 in your home.
It's like it's so heavily pixelated on the TV.
Oh, so it's not working right.
Yeah, I mean, like, I ended up watching it on Paramount afterwards again.
Oh, you did?
Because I was like, I think I've witnessed everything, but a lot of this felt very wonky. Because given the kind of, like, you know, modern TVs, they don't really look well with VHS quality.
There should be some kind of converter thing, though, that, you know, translates. I mean, because it works from other earlier technologies, because every digital TV has to translate, like, if it's from, even from, like, a DVD or whatever, you know?
I think it's because how big my screen is.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be. But, so is the VHS copy as long as the streaming copy?
Yeah, same length. I'm assuming that you're going to say it felt forever.
7.5 hours, right?
Yeah,
that's
exactly. That
was the running time of this movie, right?
See, this is a fun time where, like, I got the movie and decided to do it before, like, even knowing what it was about at all.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people on Twitter were like, oh, my God, The Relic, this sounds awesome. So I was pretty hyped going in.
No, your new best pal, Scout, loves this movie.
Holy, yeah, yeah. I definitely was just like, it's going to be amazing, right? And then, no, that's not the vibe I got.
It was not amazing for you?
A very huge sense of underwhelm.
What were you... Okay, before we get into it, what were you expecting based on the build-up or whatever you heard from friends or whatever? What were you expecting of this movie?
That is a really great question. That is a very, very great question. I guess I was thinking... It was going to be, definitely I knew it was going to be a, what do you call it, creature feature. But I was imagining kind of a, have you seen Dominion?
I don't think so. What happens in that one?
It's a prequel to The Exorcist, but it takes
place. No, I definitely haven't. Yeah, I haven't seen that. I don't think I've seen, I don't know if I have even seen Exorcist 2. I know if I have, I forgot because Scout was horrified to hear about that because somebody was like, because we're talking about the director of, I forget who made Exorcist 2.
I don't even know. That's how you know I'm failing at my horror movie trivia.
You know, maybe John Boorman directed Exorcist 2. Let me see.
But for Dominion, that takes place in Kenya and they're doing a dig. And they come across, like, an old church and artifacts and everything.
Right.
I guess, yeah, maybe I was guessing more production value and not being stuck in Chicago the entire time.
Stuck in Chicago?
Yeah. In one very, like, it took one of my favorite vibes because I always was like, it would be so amazing to be locked in a museum.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of ruined it for me.
So it was like you ruined your fantasy of night at the museum or whatever.
See, yeah, a little bit. Although I had that fantasy far before that really shitty movie came out.
Yeah, I haven't seen those movies either. That's for children. And I wasn't a child when those came out, so.
I don't know when they came out. I just saw one of them, and I know Robin Williams played Teddy Roosevelt.
Okay, yeah, things come like the... displays come back to life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or come to life. Kind of like in this, in a way.
In a way.
Yeah. This is a very strange movie. I kind of didn't know what to make of it from moment to moment. I think it was really confused about what it was trying to be. Like, it was 3-4 different kinds of movies mashed together. Like, it was sort of Indiana Jones, and then it was a monster movie. There was like a, you know, whatever, body horror possession alien thing.
And you have this one, like, annoying beat cop who's obsessed with, like, fixing everything. Nobody likes him.
Well, I love Tom Sizemore. He just died, like, a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
The guy that was, you know, battled substance abuse his whole life. He's a really fucked up character. Got into all kinds of trouble. Like, he got in trouble for, like, allegedly molesting an 11-year-old on a film set. Dear, I mean, God. He's a very, very troubled man. But he's good in a bunch of stuff, and he always plays kind of... This is a very, very normie kind of character for him to be playing, you know? Except for his weird superstitions or whatever. He was like Bruce Willis or something, you know? In this... He was supposed to save the day. And then you've got Penelope Ann Miller, who I only really know from kind of like sexy thrillers, like from the 80s, I think, or maybe early 90s.
Which made her character all the more interesting.
Yeah.
Because she was so, not prudish, that's not the right word. I don't know.
Just well, she seems so ditzy for like a big time scientist.
Yeah, she was like almost very, yeah, scientist, but ditzy. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's the like 80s porn movie version of a scientist, you know, like the sexy scientist. She's always dressed up and stuff.
Yeah, you got that airheaded vibe and everything, even though she's supposed to be a genius in some field that we're not really specific what she's a genius in.
And she, more or less becomes a damsel in distress every time Tom Sizemore shows up, which is kind of hilarious. There's supposed to be some kind of romantic tension between them, I guess.
Yeah, I read a lot of people saying that. I didn't see it at all.
No, I mean they're written this way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that they were supposed to feel it. Did you?
No, I don't think any sparks flew. Not as far as I could discern.
I think the only sparks that flew in this movie were when the joint hit the ground in the bathroom. Yeah,
that's true. So, I mean, it starts off in this kind of asshole Indiana Jones kind of explorer guy is dosed with some kind of hallucinogen, and then he's packed off in a crate and is transformed into a creature, like into this chimera that protects the tribe, the Brazilian tribe that he has, you know, invaded. And that's all fine. Like that could have been good, but then it just becomes just an action kind of apocalypse kind of movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the message is completely muddled. You know, the movie doesn't seem to know what the fuck it wants to do.
I think the movie itself doesn't know what the relic really is. Was it Cathoga?
Yeah.
Like, even at the end, I was very much questioning, because I think we find out Cathoga was the Indiana Jones character-like guy. Like,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, because they did an analysis and it's changing. So it's eating all the hypothalamus because that's the gland that controls like growth and stuff, you know?
Don't you love that we got to learn about that?
Yeah, they said, I don't know if any action movie has said the word hypothalamus as many times as this one. So I guess it's got that going for it.
Yeah.
then there's Linda Hunt shows up and she has nothing to do, which is unfortunate. As the kind of like the head of the museum.
You're coming out very scratchy on your end.
I am?
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't know. I don't know what it could be.
I don't know what that
could be. Weather. I wonder if it's weather.
Yeah.
It started
last like 5 minutes where I was just like, I kind of like, you know, the reverb sound you get.
Yeah. 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 That kind of electronic kind of. Yeah. So that's got to be, I think that's like a connection thing, you know?
Yeah. Dimitri is talking to me from another universe.
Yeah. I'm talking to you from a realm in which I'm morphing from one kind of creature to another.
You really are.
Because I just finished eating like a whole bowl of like hypothalami or whatever. So who knows what I'm going to end up being by the end of this conversation.
Yeah, right now you're just a robot. That's definitely what you sound a little bit more like.
Really?
Yeah. I almost don't know if we should like fix it or just have this entire episode of you sounding robotic.
Well, that's all right. You know, it's up to you.
It's almost like we could just keep going and then maybe you'll suddenly be human again.
We'll see. Yeah. It's just consistently the same way?
No, because you suddenly just started sounding human right now.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm back. All right.
All right. Dimitri's back with us. The hypothalamus was not eaten.
Maybe clean feed or whatever the gremlins or Alexa didn't like me talking about the genetic composition of this creature that we don't really understand or see. It's some kind of lizard, but it's morphing. I mean, I guess one of the ways they can explain why they didn't show it, aside from like not wanting to spring for more practical effects or models or anything, is that it's always changing.
Mm-hmm.
The creature as it eats stuff, eats some more hypothalami. Yeah, I don't know what even to say about this movie.
Should we take it from the Chicago perspective, horror watcher perspective? I don't know.
Well, yeah, the Chicago stuff, yeah, it's a shame that, like, okay, you got Chicago, you've got some exterior shots of the Field Museum, but then you spend the rest of the fucking movie in the tunnels. And you don't do anything
in and all that.
You don't do anything interesting with them. There are good movies set in tunnels, but this is not one of them.
There are a lot of good horror movies that take place in one fixed location, and this wasn't one of them either.
Yeah, it did. All those shots of the tunnels did make me think of, maybe 4 or 5 years before this thing was filmed, we had the Great Chicago Flood, which I was at the Art Institute for. We had school was canceled for a week because all the basements of all the high rises were flooded because there was a leak and that was going through those tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
That they hadn't fixed. They were doing bridge work on the Kinsey Street Bridge, and they didn't listen to some engineer, and, yeah, it was a big fucking disaster. So I thought about that. So there's a Chicago tie-in. It has nothing at all to do with this movie.
It's got a good vibe. Yeah, I'll take it. We started this podcast off with Mein Kampf, and then Alexa robot.
I think it's your Alexa that's doing this. It's mad that I'm criticizing its existence.
See, you still don't know which device I have because you're not saying it, and I'm not saying it because I don't want it to talk to me right now.
Okay, Beetlejuice.
Exactly. Yeah. That is exactly that.
Hal, you have Hal in your house, don't you?
How did you know?
Hal, your home electronic monitoring device, Hal Beetlejuice.
Okay, that actually now sounds like you're saying Heil Beetlejuice, and I'm just like, wow.
Well, yeah, that's because you're still thinking about your buddy Hitler. Yeah,
that is so bad. Because I don't know if I told you, but I went to a funeral last week.
Your uncle passed away, right? Yeah.
And my family were notorious for being great with serious situations.
How are you great with it?
We just don't have a serious bone in our body. none of us.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So you're all cracking jokes at the funeral?
Yeah. And my one cousin kept showing me hipster Hitler things. I guess there's a comic called Hipster Hitler.
Mm.
I know. And I was just like, what in dear God's name?
Like, that makes sense. It's all these haircuts that like the bros have been getting for the past 5-10 years. I always think of them as Hitler Youth haircut. You know, the ones that are kind of like have product on the top and then it's buzzed on the sides.
You know, the minute you say that, I immediately think Brendan Urie from Panic at the Disco. Is that the look you're talking about?
I guess. I mean, it's like it's ubiquitous. A lot of the kind of like
themselves Proud Boys.
Like yeah, like that. But like even. It's just everywhere, like the kind of like the new the modern kind of barbershop kind of look, you know, or and they have some kind of they usually have like a beard or some fucking mustache or something, you know.
Oh, they love to have their beards. I've noticed that.
Yeah.
If it's a mustache, that's just 10 years ago. It's over.
Well, yeah, it started with the but like these kind of throwback. But I always thought that these like kind of razor cut like on the sides, real. Clean on the sides, but then with product on the top, always reminded me of Hitler Youth.
A little bit. No, I vibe it. Yeah.
Yeah. There's been variations on this haircut. Like it's been in forever and ever among the hipster Hitlers. So yeah, I get the reference. The Hitler. Yeah. I see that. So that's what you guys were all like laughing about at your uncle's funeral. Were you close to this person at all or no?
My mom has so many aunts and, I mean, brothers and sisters.
Oh, you didn't even know who it was, whose funeral you were at?
You know, it's so funny. He did live down the block from us for
a
good portion of my childhood. I just really never spoke to the man.
Oh, wow.
It's not like they had any beef or anything. It was just too big of a family.
But you were required to be at this funeral?
Yeah, I think it's because it was like, the first sibling of my mom's to die. Mm. And I guess that makes you get really weird with existential vibes or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cause she could feel, yeah. One step closer.
Yeah.
To the finish line.
I think our joking though helped cheer her up. Hipster Hitler saved the day.
I don't know. I mean, like, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I mean, funerals are for the living, not for the dead, you know?
Exactly.
They're for you all, and it's not like the dead. What the fuck does a dead person care? He's already dead.
There's one thing I do remember about this guy is he did have a sense of humor, so he'd probably be cool with it.
Was he older than your mom?
Yeah, he was 82. As I said, huge age gaps in that family.
Oh, okay.
So it's one of those ages where it ceases to be a like total shock when they die.
Hmm. But yeah, 82 is a full life. I mean, but. I'm surprised that was there some kind of beef between them? Like, why didn't you ever see him like growing up?
Saw him on holidays.
Oh, okay, but you never talked to him.
No, as I said, very big age gap, and my mom is like one of 8 kids.
Mm.
So like we had like our favorite aunts and uncles, and I gotta say, none of them were really our like her brothers. We just liked her sisters.
Oh,
and. It's not funny, apparently, to say that we all thought one of her sisters were going to die first and we actually would have preferred it, but we all got a kick out of it. My mom didn't.
So it wasn't the funeral that you were looking to attend? You were looking for a different funeral than you got?
Honestly, it was just a very meh funeral, but what funeral isn't?
How's the food?
I was caught in a very smart family situation because two of my siblings hate each other.
Oh, yeah. Don't you say there's always at least one on the outs? That's your family tradition?
Yeah, and it's so fun because, like, I was sitting with my brother and his wife and everything in one area because, like, it was a wake and everything at first. Then it turned into a funeral. I guess that's how Lutherans do it. We're not Lutheran, but I just went with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was sitting by them, and, like, my Apple Watch went off, and I see it's a message from my sister. And she's like, I'm here. I'm not going by you because Matt's there.
They're the ones that don't like each other.
Yeah. So I basically tried to stay away from both of them, and they kept going by the food. Yeah. So I just sat there, like, hungry, because I didn't want to be, like, the person that either of them, like, got angry at.
Oh, Jesus.
Like, I don't need to be staying next to one of them, and then I'd come back with, like, a donut, and then they'd be like, why were you by that person? Blah, blah, blah.
I think you're overthinking it. You should have just gotten some snacks.
I should have. I really should have. That was the takeaway. Well,
let's critique your approach at your family funeral. Let's analyze what you did wrong.
What did I do wrong? Well, I introduced a few people to our podcast. I think that was a right. That was a win, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you're at a funeral. It's a great time to talk about a horror movie podcast that barely even analyzes the movie that for each subject, you know.
My cousin likes it for the titles we come up with.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Like, she actually started, like, listening to them while we were at the funeral.
Oh, at the funeral?
Yeah, I saw her put her AirPods in.
That's awesome.
And I was just like, all right, then.
Which one did she put on, do you know?
Magical Jew.
Okay.
As I said, right. Hipster Hitler was on the mind.
Yeah, yeah. Right. You gotta make fun of all the ethnicities. Yeah.
Especially because it's the most, like, whitest event. We were so white. Yeah.
It was exclusively for white people.
It was so white that my one brother's wife didn't show up. Like, I feel like even she knew, because she's Mexican. Like, she just probably was like, nah, I'm not going with all those white people.
Right. Too many white people.
I'd feel that way.
Yeah, this is one of the billion and one missed opportunities of The Relic is, like, it started out, I mean, where I think it was supposed to be going was a critique of sort of, like, these anthropological digs in colonialism and what, you know, European and American, you know, that go to other lands do with plundering treasures and artifacts, you know what I mean? But it totally dropped that ball at some point. It just became this, like, let's save all the rich people movie, you know?
Yeah.
Like, why do you want to fucking save? What the fuck do you want to? All those fucking rich people, just why do you want to save them anyways?
I mean,
just have them all die.
It was supposed to be all about, like, what, superstitions or something?
Superstition, yeah, yeah.
And, like, that alone is just making a mockery of, like, other people's beliefs and everything.
It is true that...
Yeah, go on.
That the Field Museum, you know, very often has these kind of pop culture exhibits that aren't really science to attract huge crowds.
I've noticed.
Yeah, and they make this is how, you know, museums are not funded correctly in this country, so they have to come up with these gimmicks or have events like gala openings or, I mean, I know the Field Museum hosts a lot of, like, weddings and stuff and other kind of functions.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they make their money, you know, instead of by preserving artifacts or, you know, science, natural history, which is what it's supposed to be doing.
I will say this as someone who spent their life studying history and has a degree in it. The Field Museum is actually the museum I like the least.
Oh, yeah?
In Chicago. It is so boring. It has no appeal. I just remember, like, as a kid, I liked it because it had a really cool, like, Egyptian exhibit at one point.
I like those, and I think they've since moved it to the Museum of Science and Industry. Those make a mold machines, you know, like when you put in the money and it makes you like a dinosaur or like a little soldier.
At the zoo too, they have that at the Field Museum still, I believe.
Yeah, that's where I got mine. I have a dinosaur, but I guess at the Museum of Science and Industry, sometime recently, I never made it over there. I guess they had a bunch of them, like you make a bunch of different animals. That's about it for me in the Field Museum. I was never super interested in stuff there.
That and I don't know when they unveiled the Sue the T-Rex. Mm-hmm. That was a cool moment, but really, Field Museum really kind of did not get a lot of big things going for it.
No, I don't know. I mean, people seem to like it, but Who the fuck knows? Here's another bizarre thing that I don't know where the fuck they made up, is that that sort of the security system that they invented for that museum, which seems more like for the Pentagon or Fort Knox or something, where everybody's locked in.
Vibes?
I don't know what the fuck it was, but it had nothing to do with like what an actual museum, a museum security system is like, you know?
Are you planning a museum heist, Dimitri?
No, but museum security sucks.
It does. You know,
famously, that's why you have art thefts all the time, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they still haven't solved the Isabella Stewart Gardner heist, you know? And it's over 30 years later. I think it's 30 years now. They still haven't solved that thing. They have stupid miniseries, these like true crime miniseries about that don't have anything but like just kind of theories. You know what I mean? So yeah, museums are not like Fort Knox or like the U.S. Mint or whatever. So I don't know where the fuck that came from.
And don't get cops who care that much that a security guard died.
Yeah. That was the amount of time they spent focusing on that unsmoked joint, you know, that he dropped after his head was cut off.
I really wanted to bring that one up. That was so random.
No, but like at that point I was like, all right, so this is in the 90s. Is this like a don't do drugs, say no message? Like, why the fuck are you focused? Is he being punished because he snuck into the bathroom to smoke a joint?
I was wondering if it was the sin factor thing too. I was like, are we going to start killing people because of this?
Yeah. I mean, they did the good, you know, the typical action / horror movie thing of the 80s and 90s, but like killing all the black characters, you know, they killed all of them one after the other.
Yeah.
None of them had big parts, but they all died. You know?
That is your typical. Yeah. I was a slasher film. You know, I just really haven't seen enough creature features to really know that. Are we calling this a creature feature? What are we calling this?
I don't know what the fuck we call it.
Because some points it just felt like straight like cop thriller moments.
Yeah, it's mostly like an action adventure movie. I think the creature is sort of incidental, and I think in a creature feature you have to see the creature, and you don't really ever see the thing. I guess except for like at the end when it's being burned up in like the very, very rudimentary CGI, very shitty CGI at the end when she sets it on fire, you know?
I'm seeing the
scientist girl. Yeah.
Whoa, they spent $40 to $60 million on this.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of action.
What did
they spend it on? Probably.
I think it has to be mostly in the opening scene alone.
Like all the a lot of the action sequences, yeah. I mean, I guess this guy is mostly known. You know what he did most of his career is he directed Jean-Claude Van Damme movies. That's what he did more of than anything else. You know,
that definitely.
So he's like an action movie guy, and that's what this thing definitely had that vibe, except that. You have nobody that's like a real action. Tom Sizemore is not really an action hero. And the rest of them are like nerd scientists and like fucked up explorers. And you got a guy in a wheelchair. That guy, that actor, he used to be in like noir movies. He's been in movies forever. James Whitmore.
Mm-hmm.
Like her beloved, like whatever. Older
mentor.
Mentor, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. It's a bunch of parts that don't ever cohere, and you don't care about any of these people. You know, I mean, I think they could have done so much more with the thing with the asshole explorer guy being turned like bit by bit into the creature. Like they could have done a whole like Wolfman transformation thing. You know what I mean?
See, I was going to show that the fly in my
or
head.
Same thing. You know?
Yeah. I think like there are just so many different like storylines where like they could have done an entire movie if they just stuck to one of them.
Yeah, they had many ideas. It's like it seems like one of these movies, and it's probably true, you know, there's several co-screenwriters. It was made by committee, and it never, it was like a soup that just didn't stay on the stove for long enough or something to boil down to something.
Like, because you could do an entire movie, I think, with the two anthropologists who hate each other.
You could do like four movies.
Cop, you know? And his weird superstitious history and what's wrong with him.
Yeah, and how his, they totally dropped the whole like joke about his wife getting the dog in the divorce. Like they had that going for a while. So it was kind of like a, like one of these like Lethal Weapon buddy kind of movies, but he had no buddy.
How many times do they say who gets a dog in a divorce and shit?
Yeah, so there's so many mismatched parts. And yeah, it starts out as this kind of supernatural kind of whatever body transformation horror thing. And there's a billion like better kind of voodoo movies, you know, than this.
Mm-hmm.
But it dispenses with all that in the last like hour or whatever, which is just like one chase scene after another, and then the creature popping up out of the shadows and, you know, eating another hypothalamus and then disappearing again.
And I want to know what writer decided to come up with the whole hypothalamus thing.
Yeah, it's the logic of it is so muddled. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm hardly a fucking scientist, but none of this makes any fucking sense. And this is one of these movies where especially poor Penelope Ann Miller has to say all this science, all this kind of exposition, you know? This movie is so guilty of, like, saying instead of showing.
Mm-hmm.
It's saying all this stuff that we're supposed to set up the terms or the stakes.
God, I feel like they could have done so much more, because I feel like at the center of it, it was supposed to be about superstitions and this Cthulhu thing, and it was a big miss.
Yeah, and about one culture plundering the artifacts and the sacred, you know, relics of another, you know, without any respect for it. I mean, yeah, there's this whole thing, like I was thinking, you know, these days many, many museums are having to grapple with how they got the things they got in their collections, and many of them are having to return them to whatever land they were plundered from. Because even if, like, the people that donated this stuff had, like, good intentions, the way that these things were either bought or stolen isn't right most of the time, a lot of the time.
I would say a lot of the time stolen, but yes.
Yeah, not all, but sometimes paid for, but there's so many missed opportunities. I mean, but this is a missed opportunity that the whole fucking Indiana Jones series is super guilty of, you know?
Definitely.
and at least Indiana Jones has whatever you think, you know, has a charismatic, you know, whatever, a guy you're supposed to root for. Mm-hmm. Who the fuck do you root for in this movie? I don't know.
Like, I was trying to root for our, you know, scientist. I was like, I'm kind of on her side a bit.
I was trying to root for the fucking monster most of the time, but like, I never got to know him. So, you know,
our scientist, she just wasn't strong enough for me to root for. So
no.
I was just like, I just need something to jump out at me. I was waiting to see what our monster looked like, and they seemed to obviously have no idea what they were doing with it either.
No. And I mean, the monster, but was more, whatever, clearly morally in the right. It was there to, it was sent to wreak vengeance on a culture that had been attacked, you know, unfairly. It's like, you know, this creature is basically, it's a golem, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's a thing that like the tribe comes together and it makes this monster to protect it. They explain that. But so he should be the hero. So why the fuck is, but then he's burned alive and we're supposed to be like feel relief or something? Like, why? No. The fucking thing should have kept growing and like eaten the whole city, you know? You know what I mean?
Even though, like, I would have an idea for a sequel. The monsters never die in these movies, really.
No. And there was a scene towards the end, I don't know if you noticed, when they're all cleaning up and they focus on like a claw or something on the ground for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your setup for the sequel, because you know the fucking DNA of the supercharged hypothalamus, like on the whatever, the jungle leaves, is just sitting there dormant waiting for number two, for Relic 2. Is there a Relic 2?
I don't know.
I'm sure there's like a straight to video. There's always five or six sequels to these movies. I mean, I think this movie probably did pretty well. No?
It got its budget back.
Yeah.
Like okay. It made.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it let him keep directing movies, clearly. Yeah, let's see Peter Hyams. Let's see his deal here. It's not his, he'd made movies before that. He'd been around for a while. I don't think he was young when he made this. Yeah, he's been making movies since the 70s, so.
I like how I'm seeing under reception that one film historian gave it a 2.5 out of 4 stars, but they summed it up, and it's actually something I thought of a lot, Alien in a Museum.
Yeah, sure, yeah. It definitely had a shitload of Alien vibes. With the way that it was always in the shadows,
you know? As you were saying, like the tunnels and all that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, see, he's done a lot of action movies and kind of sci-fi-ish kind of things. Presidio, yeah. I don't know. And he's sort of like, what they always say about Peter Hyams, his big thing is that he does the cinematography himself.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know that there's anything super special about the cinematography in this movie.
I mean, it just looked kind of...
It was hectic.
Yes.
That's for sure. It was really hectic.
Looking at the poster for the movie right now, and it looks so much more... It's drawing me in more than the actual movie did.
Well, that's a whole different... That's a whole different art. You know, they hire artists to create these posters, you know, and that's just advertising, but
they were able to advertise in well.
Just as there are often different directors to make the, you know, the previews.
I think that there should be awards for previews.
Oh yeah, I would definitely award a lot of trailers awards because they spare me from seeing the full movies. Exactly. Because I see the whole movie. I mean, those are really bad trailers, actually, the ones that give away a lot, you know? The good ones don't tell you anything. They
like
just show
Barbie
you something.
Like the Barbie movie trailer.
Yeah.
That didn't really tell you anything.
Or like the Blair Witch Project one, you know? Like, unfortunately.
I'll see the preview for that.
Yeah, but it's a bait and switch. But, whereas, yeah, the good, but many trailers are very, very useful to me because it allows me not to go see the movie.
Are you that kind of... Oh, no. I was about to say, are you that kind of person who nudges the person next to you and be like, we're going to see that movie based on trailers? And I forgot you like seeing movies alone a lot.
Yeah, I rarely see movies with other people. Yeah. I sometimes run into... I mean, because I go to the same places for movies all the time. Like, I go to the Siskel and the Music Box the most, you know, of any places. Doc films sometimes too in Hyde Park, but who I see at those places are a lot of the same people. You know, it's, a couple of them I'm friends with, but
you're regular.
Yes, but most of them I totally avoid. I don't have any interaction with
people too. So,
I mean, at movies, well, yeah, I guess in general too. But I mean, seeing a movie, I mean, to me, it's a solitary activity. I mean, you're seeing it yourself. You're not seeing it with somebody else's eyes. I mean, unless you're going to a movie like it's a date or something, that's different. But there, half the time, the movie's not really the point anyways.
Yeah. Wow. Now I'm just immediately thinking of my very first date was to see a movie.
Yeah? What movie was it?
Well, this will just immediately bring my age to you. The Da Vinci Code.
Ah.
Yeah. That one was
another
awkward.
long and boring movie.
Even more boring when someone's trying to hold your hand.
Oh,
like, yeah.
So how old were you?
The right way. I would have to be like maybe like, let's see what year it came out. Yeah, I know one of the Mission 90s? Impossible movies came out 2006.
Oh, okay.
So I was 16.
Right, sure. Of course.
Only reason I know that one of the Mission Impossible movies came out then was because his family was very, very Christian and forbid him from seeing the Da Vinci Code.
Oh, yeah, because it's like that's like devil worship.
So we had to learn the plot of Mission Impossible so he could act like he saw that movie.
Oh, you went there against their wishes?
Yeah. This is the only person in my entire life who broke up with me, and it's because I was a corrupting person.
Oh, like his family pressured him to break up with you?
Yeah.
Why? Did you like give him an upside down cross for Valentine's Day or something, or?
In high school, honestly, I don't think, like, you never really see anyone more than, like, a month or so.
Yeah, that's, like, a long-term relationship.
But you've given me ideas for good gifts to give to people now in the future. Upside-down cross? Hell yes. Sure. Ouija board? Here you go.
Won't you be my Anton LaVey?
Oh, my God.
Here you are.
That would be so
you can make like a little like, yeah, can't like upside down cross candy or something.
We're just gonna like do a whole Satanist Valentine's Day thing this year. We should do that. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Not like I ever know when Valentine's Day is. It's usually like I'm February. Almost caught off guard. Yeah.
Well, it's a Hallmark holiday, so like, what the fuck do you? I have nothing but bad associations with Valentine's Day. It's such a no-win holiday, especially for guys.
Do you feel
it's a like fucking nightmare?
Every Valentine's Day, do you think Tom Sizemore's character is like fucking bitch stole my dog?
Well, yeah, he thinks that, but then it's like, but the good thing is I'm gonna hook up with this hot science chick because I saved her life. And yeah, that's going to make me forget my beloved dog, maybe.
Hopefully. Maybe she'll bring him a new dog.
Maybe.
And then
maybe
crush his spirits.
Through the magic of science, she'll cure him of all his weird superstitions.
I like that she made fun of his superstitions, but she didn't hit it enough. I feel like she could have made fun of him more, and then it could have actually been more of a theme about superstitions, but she just dismissed it a little bit.
That's their kind of like chemistry meet cute, and he's set up to replace the old wheelchair guy because the old wheelchair guy's into all the superstitions too.
Mm-hmm.
So Tom Sizemore is going to replace him in her life going forward.
I guess so, we all need a superstitious person in our life. Is that the moral of the story?
There's no fucking moral. With this one, yeah, I can't think of another episode where we're grasping at straws as much as this one.
I feel it had to be one that I picked because sometimes I pick some. Not always. Like, it was just like, I didn't know what I was getting into.
That's fine. No, but like, if nothing else, this has got a good backstory with the VHS, that didn't, you know, an analog. You know what? You should go and send Joe Swanberg a telegram or however he likes to communicate and tell him like you didn't like this movie.
Mm-hmm.
put the VHS on a Pony Express and send it back to Analog.
Does anyone have a messenger pigeon or something?
Yeah.
Let's see if it can carry the VHS back.
Yeah, you can send it by parcel post, Pony Express. To Analog.
Be like, sorry, it's for you. You can keep it.
Yeah.
Like, I know now why it was free.
I'm sure people just donate him scads of VHSs because nobody needs them anymore.
Yep. But shockingly, I have throughout this process, because I told everyone I was watching this on VHS, mm-hmm, I have found out how many weird people still watch things on VHS.
I guess there's many whatever subcultures that make fetishes out of outmoded technology. I mean, a lot of these places that I go see movies, it's people that, you know, are obsessed with you know, seeing movies on film, which admittedly, yeah, movies on film are do look better than digital. Like there's just, it's like kind of like the difference between listening to a record and an MP3, you know, but they focus on it on this, like this old technology so much that it almost like doesn't matter if the movie's good or not, as long as it's like on 35 millimeter, then they'll adore it. Just because of that, and I'm sorry, like that's just a fucking delivery system. If your movie's a piece of shit, it'll be a piece of shit in every format. You know. So I'm not wedded to any one kind of technology or format or whatever. That's just, those are the tools at your disposal. You can make a great movie on a fucking iPhone. That's been proven over and over again, you know?
I feel like this is the kind of movie that could have been made on an iPhone, yeah.
This one, well, if they'd made it later, it would become like one of these found footage movies or something, you know?
I could see that for sure. Yeah. And this is based
on a lot of shaky cam, you know? I'm sorry, can you repeat?
This is based on real events or whatever.
Yeah, 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 this actually happened, yeah. Right.
Love stories like that. Mm-hmm. Why do they bother doing that anymore? Does anyone actually, like, take that?
It's probably just tradition. It's just because the form... Yeah, like the Blair Witch was an earlier one of these, you know? Claiming to be a documentary.
Total found footage. We found it in the woods. This is what happened.
It was buried, yeah.
The Blair Witch, she took it.
I mean, there's probably, like, just an overall hunger for anything that is tangible and real these days, because everything's just so fleeting and so interchangeable that even like, so if you put that caption at the beginning of your movie, it creates some sort of expectation or hope, you know, that it's a little bit more permanent than like just another, whatever, 3-second TikTok video, whatever passes for entertainment these days.
'Cause like, I will say what our last movie, not we need to talk about Kevin, but the Possession that started off with the this really happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They totally did that. Yeah.
Do people seriously think that though? Like,
I'm sure there's some segment of the population that will always be fooled by stuff like that. I mean, you know, there was a segment of the population that Orson Welles fooled with the War of the Worlds thing. You know.
Yeah,
so there's
a movie about that.
Yeah, but like, I think people, you know, like the X-Files says, they want to believe. They really do. And
what would those people say of this movie?
I have no fucking clue. I have no clue what.
I don't know what I have to say about this movie.
What the critical response is? Yeah, it seems like a collection of random parts that got mashed together to me. You know. I never felt on very solid ground with any character or any theme in this movie, especially. But like, yeah, we've talked about many different things, and each of those things may have made a decent movie, but none of them were like stuck with, it was like the movie had ADD or something, you know. It just couldn't stick to a subject.
Yeah, I just don't think any science person could have known all the things that chick did. I don't believe that a cop can be that weirdly superstitious. They're all just such caricatures.
Yes. Yeah, everybody was a character. There wasn't...
Very heavy-handedly. Like, they didn't even try to disguise it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's why it was... You never felt like you could identify with anybody, because everybody, as you say, is just a cartoon, you know?
Like, there are some moments where I was like, oh, maybe this, like, I'm going to get into the kids that are, like, staying overnight or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
we're totally forgot about. Yeah, I don't even remember. Did they get killed or get eaten?
I was hoping you were going to say whether they did or didn't.
I think they cut away from that.
I think
just
they did.
And it even starts out this way. So there's these scenes of the asshole collector guy, and he's given the potion to drink, and he starts hallucinating, and then this person in all the tribal in the costume comes up on all fours to him, and then he's running to the ship trying to get his crates off the ship, mm-hmm. But then it's like 6 weeks later or whatever. So they didn't
no resolution.
No, and they didn't. They should have spent longer really setting up the premise, you know,
and then sticking to said premise.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been a totally interesting movie if they just stuck to the like asshole Indiana Jones guy, you know.
That's what I'm saying. It, like, maybe watch Dominion if you are into that at all. Mm. I don't know. It's one of those, like, no. You got to be into that vibe, but that's expecting.
No, I don't need that in my life.
I was expecting, like, much more of a, like, origin story to said relic beforehand. Yeah.
This is the kind of movie that makes you feel, or makes at least me feel, as if I could be, like, a screenwriter or a director, because there's so many obvious mistakes here, you know?
Yeah.
There's so many avenues not followed. And it's, yeah, I don't know. Maybe he just, he hadn't taken his meds that day, the days he worked on it. I don't know. Like, you got to stay on task, you know? Like,
you really do.
I'm just kind of baffled, because there are people. There's plenty of people. It's not like, you know, it's shot competently. It's got a decent cast. It's you know, it's set in Chicago.
It's a story that
yeah. There's a bunch of it. Yeah, or like it's like, you know, you assemble all your ingredients and you're gonna like bake a cake or a big elaborate meal, and then instead you don't follow the recipe. You just throw a bunch of shit in and stick it in the oven, and then forget how long it's supposed to be in, and you take it out beforehand, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you serve it on the wrong kind of plates, you know, and
you're
you don't
with this analogy, yeah,
and you don't give the guests the right silverware, you know, like you give them a spoon when they need a fork, or you know, it's every fucking
you're
turn
committed
it's wrong
to this analogy far
oh, yeah,
more than the writer was to a subject.
Well, yeah, you say what you want about me, I know how to concentrate. I have the opposite of what Peter Hybes has in this movie. I have tunnel vision. You know, I will take whatever thought to the fucking end of the line until it crashes and burns. That's my superpower.
So how long was this movie actually?
Nearly 2 hours, but it felt so fucking long. It felt so long. I don't know.
Like, in theory, it should have been a much shorter movie based on what they had to. It should have been like a 90-minute film.
Yeah, there was no need for half the shit in there, you know? They could have cut almost every scene in half, you know?
And, like, we get so focused on Science Woman's funding being possibly stolen. Like, why are we going into all these different side avenues?
Yeah, we don't need the backstory. We don't need anything about Tom Sizemore's divorce. Like, none of that is necessary.
I guess we need to get the I'm a superstitious, fucked up guy who's single.
Yeah, who like, yeah.
On
so
the
that,
market, yeah.
But yeah, it sets up their, like, romance that never happened, that except for a couple of meaningful looks, we never get that either, you know?
No.
Like, yeah, all right, here's another thing. Like, they burn up the monster, then they go and, like, start rolling around and fucking in the wreckage, you know? Like, there's another better ending for this. You know, like, I don't know. I'm just
imagining.
It just went wrong so many ways, this movie.
If you were to take the script now, I'm just trying to imagine where you would take it. And, yeah, okay.
I would have, you know what? I would have, yeah, they'd be having sex, and then the claw would climb up and
oh,
climb into them and possess them, like, so then the creature would be reborn. The what was it called? It is a chimera, but it had its own name.
I know the name of it was Cthoga.
Cthoga, right.
And is
and they could have their cathodic, yeah, Cathoga baby. So it's like Relic Junior for the second one, you know.
I mean, that would have been fascinating as fuck. Yeah.
Yeah. See, there, and this is just like this that is just spitballing. Like this took me that, 2 seconds.
Jeff Goldblum's character wanted at the end of The Fly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's basically that. Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
And then we can make the Relic Two, and it would actually be like really to the point. We'll understand where the relic came from.
Yeah. Yeah. So the only way any of this works is if the creature is who you root for, I think. That's what I've come to. And they don't let you do that, so you can't. You have nowhere to put your sympathies at all, you know, in this movie. That's a big fucking problem. You can't have a story where you don't know where you stand as a reader or watcher or whatever, you know?
Even if you really heavily want to be on the side of the creature, you said it yourself, you don't see it enough.
No.
And it's not like one of those cool, like, suspense build-up moments like Jaws. Like, it's just one of those, why aren't you showing us?
Or, I mean, if you're being really cynical or nihilistic and saying that everybody's, like, the people killing it are bad and the creature's bad, that's not really spelled out either. Because how can you really root for the cop or the... I mean, what, you're rooting for the science girl just because she's pretty? I don't know. Like, why? Why are you rooting for her? She's kind of a bitch, too, you know? She's shitty to her coworkers. She's uppity. And then, like, her work kind of whatever enemy is, like... Total character of like an Asian kind of brainy guy.
Also, isn't that a little shitty? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's almost like Long Duck Dong, you know, like from Revenge, like, you know, like for those horrible 80s movies, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah, he's that, like, they have him. Yeah, it's
I think he unseemly. Is like the only person of color in the movie other than our guard.
The security guard and a couple of black cops that are gored, you know.
And you have your one of the kids is black too.
Oh, the woman that's working on the relic, putting back together the statue.
Oh yeah,
she's black.
See, this issue is that there's so many. I couldn't even notice that.
So yeah, it's not even consistently like interestingly racist. It's just randomly sloppily racist, you know. Like,
I would say yeah. Like I was really getting like I was gonna go with this is a racist movie, but
no, not in any consistent way, not that's in any methodical way, just casual, just then. Because yeah, I know I can't even do racism right.
Yeah.
Come on, Peter Hyams, get it together.
Do one thing right, really.
Yeah, yeah. He had one job, and it fails at like 10 jobs. It takes so many themes. It's just too many. Like, nobody could have balanced all of this, you know? Like, fucking Orson Welles or whoever you think the greatest director was. Stanley Kubrick, you know, Martin Scorsese, John Ford, whoever, you know? None of them could have balanced this many tones and themes into anything that wasn't a mess, you know?
This is the kind of script that, like, it needed to have a script doctor, and it did not.
Yeah.
Script surgeon, actually.
Yeah, no, the disease that the script has, no doctor could have cured. Dr. House couldn't have cured this. Wouldn't have cracked the code on this mystery disease. Yeah, so, I'd really be interested to hear a defense of this movie. Like, yeah, too bad we don't have Scout on this week. He could have told us why we're all full of shit and how fun and great it is.
I almost want to, like, tell him and be like, please send us your rebuttal.
He'll probably write a whole, his next book will be about how the relic is a masterpiece of 90s cinema.
It'd be the best mashup ever. Us just, like, not understanding this movie or whatever, and then him taking it very seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, he's great. And he's so, like, a lot of the kind of the film obsessives that I've run into who take on these pet projects or pet like these like ugly ducklings. Like he's got that whole series of essays about what is the unloved or unbeloved, whatever. Like he picks the ugly runt of the litter and loves it, like, and decides that it's great, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of film critics do this. A lot of critics do this. It's a really interesting kind of psychologically to me.
Yeah, we need to get his rebuttal. Like, I'm just going to message him right after this and be like, can you please tell me your thoughts on this movie?
He'll also recommend the 17 like Spanish horror movies that do things like that. That were in the relic, and give you like a reading list, and tell you the biography of every, you know, everybody that like held up like a boom, or was a PA on this movie, you know.
That would actually be far more interesting than this movie.
It would be preferable to watching this movie.
That's the point. Yeah,
that's for sure.
This is the kind of movie where I would prefer to hear, like, the person doing commentary on the movie instead of the movie.
This would be a good, like, Mystery Science Theater, like, Riff Tracks movie.
Yeah.
I could have done a Riff Tracks for this fucking movie. I think I was doing a Riff Tracks while it was going on a couple hours ago.
Could you not have recorded that, Dimitri?
I didn't know we were going to be talking about it so soon. I was just worried. I was like sitting here, like I'd finished watching, and I was like, am I going to fucking remember? And like worried if we'd have anything to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I think we found that we don't have too much about the movie to talk about, but we did actually get a lot out of it, though.
Yeah, of course.
We squeezed it for as much juice as it had.
No shit. A lot more than it had.
Yeah.
We manufactured that juice out of thin air.
Like, I was having it where I couldn't remember the movie enough. And, like, once I realized, I was like, oh, the other thing I had to do later tonight isn't, like, happening now. I immediately was just like, message Dimitri. Let's see if we can get this done.
No, I appreciate it. That, like, you're freeing my tomorrow from, like, well, now I can begin forgetting this movie right after we hang up.
Like, I was prepared to start rewatching the movie.
Oh.
And we just saved me from having to do that. I could just have it at night. Yeah.
It works out. Thanks, Relic. So, yeah. So
what movie do you want to do?
Okay, so I thought, I've suggested this movie before, but because of this is a failed movie with some colonialist themes, I think we should do that movie Zombie Child.
Okay, Zombie Child?
Yeah, from 2020. I think it's on Tubi. And I think it's available. It's a French movie, and there's zombie and kind of voodoo themes in it. But it's a lot about sort of colonialism. It takes place partly in the French girls' school. I thought it was really good. I saw it when it came out, but I'd love to rewatch it. I think you'll enjoy it.
It takes place in 1962 Haiti.
There's flashback. I think parts take place in Haiti, but then other parts take place in France.
Okay.
Because it's like
to make sure I had the right film.
Yeah, it's zombie with an I.
Yeah.
Zombie child.
Yeah, we've definitely discussed this in the past.
Yeah, I'd like to rewatch it and see if I still like it.
Yeah, I think its time is coming. Wow, it had a very cheap box office. Wow, it didn't make a lot of money at all.
But it's a foreign movie. It's different kind of expectations, you know. It was not. I mean, it was shown at like the films at the Siskel, you know, here, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, yeah. There's a flashback thing to 1962, but then it takes place, I think, pretty much present day in France, in this girls' school. That there's with these girls that. Want to get into some voodoo shit, you know, and they get more than they bargained for.
This definitely sounds like my vibe. Yes,
I think you'll dig. I have a feeling you'll dig this one. I'll put money down that it's fucking better than The Relic.
No, because we already know that if I were to make that bet, yes, we know it's going to be better than The Relic.
And if nothing, even if you hate it, it does stick to its to what it's doing. Like, it doesn't have any problem focusing.
That's what I want. As long as I have like a narrative that I'm focusing on, and I'm not being distracted by random ass side things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would really be interested in like what this like room full of writers with thinking would be the result of this, like throwing all these tangents. I mean, it's one thing to do tangents on a podcast. It's built in. That's the medium. But like, not in a movie. That's not what you do in a movie.
Like, as you said, it basically is just a bunch of people who probably just threw a random list of shit together and they're like, let's throw it into the movie.
I guess so. Yeah, I don't. They must have hated each other. Like, they all had their own ideas and they wouldn't give in, you know, kind of thing. I don't know how people do that anyways. I've never co-written anything with anybody. I don't. Have you ever co-written anything?
I
know
did
you did it with
once.
with AI, but like...
Even me and AI don't get along.
Yeah. What did you co-write with a human?
You know, at the end of
was
the
it a human?
Girl
it wasn't.
In
it
Chicago.
Wasn't like it wasn't yeah. your cat or anything, was it?
Oh, God, no. A friend of mine. We had actually written the one poem at the end of The Only Living Girl in Chicago together.
Was that difficult?
Not really, but I think it's just because it was our vibe, and we just kept like sending ideas of what the next line should be. So, yeah, it was just a lot of back and forth, and, yeah. It's like, you got to find someone who's, like, on the same wavelength that you're on at that moment.
Either that or you do, like whatever, an Exquisite Corpse things that just changes from, you know, scene to scene. But this is not – we're talking about this stuff, like, about all these, like, experimental kind of strategies and stuff. And this is just a – this is as mainstream a movie as you can get. This is a big budget – this is a movie you see at a multiplex, you know what I mean? This is not a movie you go see to have fucking deep thoughts or, like, think about the structure of narrative or anything. This movie's supposed to make sense, and it doesn't, and that's the problem, you know?
Agreed. Very heavily agreed.
Yeah, this is an art house fair here that we're talking about.
It does seem like there is like a thing though in the late 90s where we had a lot of kind of movies with this aesthetic.
Yeah? What are you thinking? What other one are you thinking of?
There just seemed to be a blandness in a lot of like the late 90s movies. Like, okay, I'm just going to throw out Dante's Peak, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. These kind of faceless action movie.
Yeah.
These kind of totally forgettable action movies, but that are big budget, very big budget.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, this is like.
But at least that one has like
fair.
Some redemption there, because if you want to watch a crazy thing happen, then you got that. But as you said, very faceless, very bland.
Yeah, this is just. This is corporate entertainment, you know? This is just whatever. Yeah, you're not going to this for, I don't know. Insights into whatever our culture, except for kind of unintentional ones, you know.
The only other big question I have: why'd they pick Chicago?
Probably because that music, because of the Natural History Museum, because that's where a plundered relic would end up, is a place like that.
Aren't there any better history museums in this country?
What people love that, except for you, people love that museum.
Oh, wow.
The Field Museum of Natural, yeah, they love that place. That, well, like the one in New York they love too.
Yeah, I think that one would definitely be cooler. I haven't been to that one.
Oh, you never been? Yeah, the only thing I remember that, like instead of Sue, they have this giant blue whale kind of hanging in the atrium. I'm sure you've seen pictures of it. It's been in movies. Yeah. I mean,
I'll have to go to the Field Museum again. Maybe it is better than what I remember.
Yeah, when's the last time you went?
Let's think. Maybe when I was like 20?
Oh, okay. Yeah, you should try it again, I guess. I went there with John for something. McNaughton.
See, that's how you know it wasn't that great, though, because you can't remember why you went.
I don't remember what we were going there to see, but it did. There was a good thing that came of it, because outside of that museum then were these horrible sculptures that Herb Alpert had made and paid to have displayed there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were called spirit totems, but I call them crap columns because they just looked like piles of shit. And those made it into my last book, into Paint by Numbers. I wrote a whole chapter about that, about seeing those fucking things. So sorry, Herb Alpert, if you're listening, but you inspired that.
I'm very excited for your book release. That's going to be fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I made a couple more posters. We're going to have to figure out, are you in the city anytime in the next week or two?
I don't know. Actually, yes. Yes, I have a reading that I'm doing on August 26th, maybe.
Oh, where is that?
It's at Bric-A-Brac Records.
Oh, yeah, Bric-A-Brac. I've never been to Bric-A-Brac. I've heard of it. But...
Yeah, I've went there only because it, like, is connected to that coffee shop.
Oh, yeah, the
Brood.
The horror movie one. Yeah, because it's the same couple owns it, right?
I wouldn't know.
I think it's the same couple. What's the reading? What's the theme of the reading?
Just a supporting character in this. It's for...
Who's the star? Is it Tom Sizemore or Penelope Ann Miller? Ann Miller is still alive, I think, as far as I know.
I don't want to say his name because I know I'm going to fuck it up.
Really?
Like, I know I'm going to fuck up pronouncing it.
Wow. Well, let's spell it.
Well, his first name is Ben. See?
Oh, yeah, the poet guy, the Nepodnesny.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
See, you can't get the last name either, but you know what I'm going for.
Nepodnesny. Yeah, it's a
like Polish name. Like, nice Budziani. No?
Yeah, it's one of these classic Polish names with seven extra consonants in it, you know, that are half of which are not even pronounced, you know?
If you are free that day, we can both hear how you pronounce that name.
Well, I'm sure he spent a lifetime correcting people just like
us.
Yeah.
You're supposed to probably be better at that.
Yeah, the Polish names are tricky.
Yeah.
They are.
But that should be an interesting. I don't read often, so I'll be doing that.
How'd you get hooked up with that?
Just emailed and asked me if I want to, and I was just like...
Well, he did. He invited you.
Yeah. I was kind of like, all right, why not?
Yeah. Is it just the two of you, or are there more people?
I hope there are more people, because I'm not that amazing to listen to.
Oh, well, you will be for my thing.
Oh, I thought you had another person.
You're going to be glorious. No, you're going to be amazing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I do
yes.
have one other person, yeah.
I'm going to pull out those stops. I'm saving it for you.
You're going to do all your poetry slam moves?
Hell yeah.
All the finger snaps in the world?
Have you ever been to a poetry reading when people do the snaps?
Oh, yeah.
Is that not the most awkward situation ever?
I've been to just live readings that is not even poetry that they do the snaps. Yeah, I'm sorry, you know, whatever, more power to you, but I'm embarrassed on your behalf when you do that. Like,
I feel not so awkward when people do the snaps.
People love it, yeah. It's a whole thing.
I guess I'm not friends with those poets who actually enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. No. It's been going on for fucking, you know, decades at this point.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. You know, I used to see it all the time. I mean, I haven't been going to literature events much because there's much fewer since COVID, since reopening. You know, many, many less than there used to be.
I don't go mainly because I don't like reading or seeing people.
Yeah.
But hey, now, he randomly got me and you got me. So
yeah, no, ours will be fun. Like I said, we'll play by ear. It depends on who's there and like what we feel like doing. I'm not married to any one format. We can just have a talk, you know?
I could just go on Twitter and be like, does anyone have any questions for Dimitri?
Yeah. You could take them from the audience. Yeah. The last kind of read or whatever author event kind of thing. I was at the Harold Washington Library for a friend of mine, and there's very few people there. And they kind of just let these three writers just go up there with no structure, and they just had to improvise. But yeah, the one library person was like taking questions off Twitter or off like YouTube or something.
I should do that.
It's very strange, but yeah, I mean, whatever. Yeah, we'll do whatever. It'll be fun.
We have a month.
Yeah, we have a month, and like we'll get like a bottle of wine or something. Make it all go easier.
Oh, it'll be chill as hell. I'm excited.
Yeah, and it's gonna be great. It's at a great bookstore where you like. It's going to be good vibes. It's going to be fun.
And yes, I did listen to the whole podcast, and that was very interesting. I did not know a lot of that fun Wicker Park trivia. So.
Oh, the one with Joe?
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe Judd. Yeah, he's a fucking legend. He's one of the people that is responsible for, you know, making Wicker Park, for real.
Like, yeah, the whole earwax thing. I didn't know that side story at all. That was interesting.
Oh, yeah, those people are a fucking nightmare. the cafe people. Yeah.
No, I definitely know because I know somebody who works there. So.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they were a very shitty, annoying person. Very pretentious.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we went over that in that talk is like when you hire people that are either like you or like ones you want to like be with or whatever, so it'll always reflect the ownership, you know? Whatever the vibe of the place is. And that's why, you know, Tangible Books is a cool place because it's Joe's store.
I'll say it's really hard to fuck it up if it's just your own vibe. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, it's easy to fuck it up if you're a fucked up person. Well, yeah. not
you have
suited
a fucked
for
up
it.
Vibe, then yeah.
Yeah. That, it's going to be all over the place.
But that was actually, we're on a podcast. I want to recommend that people listen to that podcast episode of yours because that was very enlightening.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
And it's called Who You Know. and it's available at all your finer podcast purveyors of choice.
It's like a podcast within a podcast. But no, as a person from Chicago, it was fun trivia that I didn't know about it. So, yeah.
There you go. So yeah, all you horror movie obsessives, you know, take a break from the thrills and chills and learn a little bit about actual Chicago history, not fake Chicago history as put forth by this weird movie that we just sat through.
Yeah.
So you don't have to.
The movie is Chicago in the 90s. You cover Chicago in the 90s.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So I guess we'll do Zombie Child next, and
yeah, and we're like, it's weird now, we're like a week ahead now. We changed up the schedule.
I know. Don't you feel like we did something here?
Yeah, brave new world.
Feels so accomplished.
You're being all adult and shit.
Yeah, I don't like it. It doesn't suit me, but.
You can revert to like panicking and doing shit in the last second whenever you like.
I could do that. Yeah, I'm gonna revert to that like almost immediately when we finish recording.
Sweet. Enjoy.
All right.